Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join us once again today. And before we get started, I just want to remind you that just because we talk about certain tax strategies or certain real estate private partnership opportunities on today's show or any other show, please don't rush out and participate without checking with your existing advisors who are hypothetically, more familiar with your facts and circumstances and can advise you as to whether what you thought you understood is correct and, more importantly, whether or not it fits your current investment or wealth creation objectives and goals. And for those of you that don't have such advisors that understand real estate taxation, retirement plan investment and or planning, and real estate partnership syndications, and then lastly, getting your finances in shape to take advantage of zero tax rates as you get into retirement, you're more than welcome to go to our website at beaplannershow.com, where you'll find a forms link right side of the page, just below the title of the page and or the header. And if you'll fill out step one, form one, we'll have enough information where then we can have a call with you, which you can schedule at the link next to the forms link that just says call, and be happy to spend some time with you reviewing your current situation and trying to give you some idea of how we might be able to work with you to invest in real estate private partnerships. I want to just mention, this is probably good a time as any, that we're not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. We strongly recommend that whether it's your existing advisors or us, somebody like us, I should say, we're certainly not the only folks that work in this area, although there doesn't appear to be that many. You should definitely engage someone before you rush in to the real estate syndication space. There's more than a few landmines out there right now. There's market issues. There's syndicators that are having problem in issues with debt structures, and you may not be aware that you're getting ready to invest with a syndicator that's got other transactions that are in trouble. And I would suggest to you, that doesn't mean the one you're looking at will get into trouble, but if you had your preference, I think you might agree, knowing about the current issues that a syndicator might be having or having separately from what you're looking at participating in, you would prefer to go with someone that's still got their head way above water. And again, I know syndicators that are quality or have quality projects, but they also have some projects that are in trouble. And personally, I would give them some space, give them some time, and see if they don't get the ship righted so that, you know, you've got a clear go forward. Real estate private partnership syndications, let me just go a little bit further here on what we do. And a lot of people that might be listening for the first time don't understand what I mean when I say a real estate private partnership syndication. And I further use the acronym REPS to shorten that. And reps involve multiple investors who passively pool their funds in a partnership under the United States Securities Exchange Commission's crowdfunding statute. That goes back to, I believe, the Obama administration, 2007 or 8, if I recall correctly. And it's a act that allows, I'm going to say, normal people, as opposed to Wall Street, to undertake capital raises to put into smaller activities. And the multifamily commercial real estate market is a hotbed of such activity. It's pretty remarkable, some of the returns that people have been able to generate in that space since these partnerships first became available, and they're only easier at the moment to get into. There's been assorted cases and rulings that confirm the availability to the layperson, sophisticated layperson, and the SEC doesn't do a real good job defining sophisticated, but joining a real estate mentor group where they have training classes would be one way to get there. Engaging with a CPA like us that reviews and advises on these transactions is another way. You'll if you engage with us, you'll certainly meet the criteria that any criteria that the SEC might apply. And if you have more than $1 million in net worth, not counting your personal residence, you'll be deemed to be an accredited investor, and therefore, at least per the statute, you will be sophisticated. Whether you are or not, I guess, is a separate question. But again, I'm going to suggest to you that whether you're accredited or not accredited, you can invest in most transactions that we see. The code section 506B, that's the SEC code or statute, and you may not be able to invest in transactions that are offered under the 506C statute for accrediteds, although in this day and time, it happens that there are transactions that are both 506B and then they convert to a 506C after they're full up with the 35 spots that the non-accrediteds can partake in. And so it does get confusing, but That statute and the manner under which these projects are offered is not nearly as confusing as the pro forma information you're going to see, the sales huff that you'll see in the private placement memorandum. The operating agreement even has some sales huff, although that tends to be a little more technically astute of the two documents. And the investment webinar is where you really got to be careful, because you have to remember that the overriding governing document in a real estate private partnership or in any partnership is the operating agreement. And there will be a provision in every operating agreement that's probably ever been generated that indicates that this operating agreement will be the last word, it'll be the final word on how the partnership is operated. And anything that you may have been told personally on a phone call or in an email or that you heard on an investment webinar, none of that matters if it gets into a litigation scenario. Now, that sets aside fraud. I mean, obviously you can't disclaim fraud by saying, well, you know, the operating agreement says, I'll give you an example, indemnification. You know, indemnification is not a carte blanche blanket indemnification. if there's fraud. So you can't disclaim fraud, but you know, mostly what's going to happen is not fraud. It's going to be maybe disagreements above or about strategy that the partnership might undertake. And unfortunately for the passive investor, more and more, there's very little voting rights. Forget about control. The passives rarely, if ever, will have voting control, but you will likely not even be able to express an opinion by voting. In many cases, we're seeing more and more deals that are structured that way. There's basically only room for one chef in the kitchen, I believe is the old expression. And, you know, that's something that you have to understand. That's some of the nuances. You need to read the documents, especially the operating agreement, to understand what the operations are going to look like as you move forward. And if you've got questions about those, you need to ask the hard questions to the syndicator and find out what's going to be the process to resolve those issues, shy of arbitration or shy of mediation. I mean, obviously, that ultimately would most likely be where a judge might steer a dispute. But I would tell you, avoid all that. You know, invest with people you trust. Invest with people that have a track record. I understand that there's always a first time for every sponsor, syndicator, lead partner, etc. Unless you've got the money to lose, which a lot of my clients do. If they lost a $100,000 investment, it probably would simply be an offset to one that they had a 2 or 3 times return on. So, you know, you expect over time, certainly, to not have all grand slams or even triples or doubles. You get a lot of singles. Nothing wrong with singles. You put enough singles together, they score as well, right? Just like in the game of baseball. But in any event, we would prefer to avoid failure. You can't guarantee that, especially in this market where a lot of syndicators did not foresee the interest rates doubling or more than doubling in the last 2 years. And, you know, you have to understand that, you know, nobody saw that coming. But then there's a lot of syndicators that offered transactions in the last 2 years where it was apparent that's where the rates were headed. And they didn't do substantial enough rate locks, or they didn't capitalize appropriately to where they would be able to withstand the onslaught of the market changes. And let me tell you, there's not many transactions that can withstand a variable rate where the rate goes up, you know, 2 to 3 or 4%. That sucks all the cash flow out of the transaction, and if it doesn't end up in foreclosure or a deed in lieu of foreclosure where the partnership is giving the property back to the lender, it's going to be tight. And you want to invest with syndicators that have a significant balance sheet, they have reserves, or they have the ability from other income sources to cover a significant deficit that might arise due to the changing environment. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and go to our first break, and we'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at nprross.com. Nathan at nprross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Big dreams and faded dreams.
Welcome back to more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were just talking about, in general, understanding that, you know, there's a lot that goes into analyzing the documents that are associated with each private partnership project that you might invest in, and more importantly, vetting the syndicator. And I guess I'm going to talk for a minute, just because it's the appropriate time, about your choices of where to find partnerships. And for those of you that may be attending Self-Made Millionaire's two-day workshop tomorrow, and for those of you that are not attending that, I would strongly encourage you to find time, if it's not this month's two-day workshop, sometime in the near future. If you've got any interest at all in understanding the landscape of real estate investing, whether it's single family or multifamily, I can tell you there is no better two-day event that you might go to. In fact, I might even stretch that out to several day event that you might go to. That 2 days will be chocked full of, I'm going to say, information, some of it valuable, some of it less so, but nonetheless, it's worth the price of admission is what I'm going to tell you. And if I heard correctly, I heard the commercial right before our show started here today, where I believe they're offering it for less than I paid 20 years ago. I don't know. I think I heard a number that was about half of the normal number. But in any event, I would tell you that you might think that's going to be a long day. I think they start at, 7 or 8 o'clock and go till 5 o'clock. And I would challenge you to find another seminar or workshop that you could go to that will keep you literally on the edge of your seat. I mean, it's most impressive. And if I understand correctly, Self-Made Millionaire himself has come out of retirement, you know, a blast from the past, you might say, to teach that class. And that really makes it worth the price of admission. And, you know, again, most of our client base is made up of people that have taken that two-day workshop, including myself, as I mentioned, sometime in the I'm not going to say the recent past, because my gosh, it's hard to believe it's been over 20 years ago that I took it, and I didn't take it anywhere near when it was first available. So hopefully this will pique your curiosity, and if you do go, be sure and tell them that the reason you're there is because you heard about it on the Be a Planner show. And for those of you that listen to the show from time to time, I think you would get a sense that Nathan Ross, CPA, doesn't pull any punches. And, you know, I call the balls and strikes as I see them. And while I don't agree with everything that you may hear that day, I'm going to tell you it's a great foundation. And I'm going to tell you, you may hear some things that were great back when they happened, but maybe some of the newer rules in the real estate arena will not allow you to undertake the same structure or steps, et cetera. But that said, it's really a great experience, and it's what got me started on my real estate journey, which continues to this day. And in fact, we're going to be entering a new phase of both life and business here towards the end of the summer. I'll talk more about that soon. And it'll be an opportunity that you may want to participate in, not as a investor, but as someone that presumably, if you're in this real estate world and you're achieving success, I'm going to just give you a hint. You need to vacation more. And I'm going to be the option for you to do that all around the world, not just in San Antonio, where my flagship property will be, but more to come on that as we get set up and registered with the appropriate regulatory authorities. And in any event, but I want to throw in a little bonus here for those of you that might be attending the two-day workshop this weekend. You know, the first day, unless it's changed, and I don't think it has, because it's a marvelous sales strategy for self-made millionaire. The first day, you're going to hear about all about single family and all the different angles on how to locate properties and, you know, acquire properties, manage the properties or have them managed, depending on your personality and your resources and how you best make money. And I doubt there's very many of you that will make more money managing your property than having someone that does that for a living handle that. But in any event, you're going to hear a lot about single family on the first day, and that's all fine and dandy. But I'm going to tell you, don't flake out and not come to the second day just because you think, or you might think at that point, that, hey, I can achieve financial freedom with single family. And I'm not going to say you won't, but I'm going to tell you there's such a big difference in the potential throughput, let's call it cash flow, that will come out of the multifamily arena versus single family. Single family is great if you've only got the requisite amount of funds, and I'm not going to tell you necessarily how much it is. I'm just going to tell you it's not like the good old days when you could go buy five houses and be out of pocket maybe $100-$150 a house, if that. I remember a program that I worked with back, it's hard to believe, it's been almost 20 years ago, that was right here on AM 700, the mortgage manager. And I know that they had a single family rehab or acquisition and rehab program where you could literally get into $100,000 to $120,000 type single family loans or acquisitions without any money out of pocket. And I know that sounds hard to believe. If you're going to a platform now, training, and you're hearing, you know, that you need. I think the current numbers are somewhere in the $20,000 to $25,000 range if you're lucky, out of pocket to acquire a 322 single story brick home, which would be the real bread and butter of the Houston area. You know, again, that's a lot of money. And I'm not saying you can't find money to flip a property that is very little out of pocket, maybe the closing costs, you know, $4,000 or $5,000. But flipping is not really what, you know, investment real estate is about. It's not to say that you can't make money. In fact, I know one of the founders of another local program I speak about from time to time. He's purportedly made millions of dollars flipping homes. And, you know, who's to say that all that happened or didn't happen? I don't know what to believe. I just know that flipping is a job. And, you know, as you're working on one property, you got to find the next. And from a tax perspective, it may not be the most efficient type of real estate investing. I'm using the word investing because that's what I would try to keep it as. I would tell you, if you're going to flip, you know, a couple houses a year, and you're approaching it from the standpoint that, you know, when you buy the property, it's either got a tenant in it or it's rentable on day one. May not be perfect, but it's rentable. I would encourage you to rent the home, you know, fix, you know, the repairs. You wouldn't do a full rehab and still be able to deduct repair money while it's a, quote, rental property. You make it available and ready, place it in service, put your sign in the yard on day one for rent, take a photo or two of it, and get it listed in whatever the local neighborhood type news paper is. I don't know, is Green Sheet still around? Maybe put it in the Green Sheet for the area you're in and make copies of that ad, put it in your file for the property, and you've got a rental property that later you may decide to sell it. And if you do that, great, not a problem with that. Although if you do it in less than a year from the date that you placed it in service, it's not going to be treated as the best type of income that we like to have. It would be capital gain, but it would be short-term capital gain if you held it for less than a year, which means you would pay ordinary income tax rates. That said, that's like the second threshold to the best type of income that we want. And you're probably wanting to know, well, what type of income is that? Well, that would be long-term capital gains. And that's for the same type of property, a property that we bought and held, either rented it or didn't rent it. Although if you want to deduct things right away, you're going to have to at least make it ready and available. Two key concepts. And a property could be ready to be rented, but it's not available to be rented because you've got issues with it. Conversely, it could be available, but you're not ready to rent it because it's got issues of other sorts. And so once it's ready and available, that's when you place it in service. You start your depreciation. You're able to deduct repairs. Maybe not capital items, although there are ways of deducting even the capital items still under the code. I'm not going to get into the details of the bonus depreciation, but suffice it to say that it's currently in its five-year phase-out period. So I believe for the current year, we get 60% of the tangible bonus depreciation. But bottom line is you want to start the clock as soon as you can on that ready and available rental property, because everything gets better from that point on. Now, again, it doesn't mean that you actually found a tenant yet, you've signed a lease, and they've moved in. That's superfluous to the argument that it was ready and available. That'd be great, you know, if it were. As I've said before, there's not a better looking piece of rental property in the world than one that's got a rent-paying tenant in it. And I'll continue to say that, having bought and sold somewhere north of 100 single-family rental properties over in San Antonio. In any event, the game, though, if you're going to, and I hate to use the word flip, I'm using it simply to direct your attention. If you want to buy properties and sell them, you know, after they've been fixed up, you want to document that purchase as you're buying it as an investment. You're not buying it to flip it. Don't generate emails to your accountant, to your lawyer about this flip that we're looking at acquiring. No, you're buying a piece of real estate that you could even say, I'm buying it for rental. Look, people find out things after they buy a property where maybe they didn't realize just how hot of a ticket it was. They didn't realize that the location was changing. And I know where I used to buy properties in San Antonio on the east side, that whole area has had an incredible metamorphosis, be kind of like the Heights here in Houston. And I know there were times when we purchased a property, and due to the fact that other people were scouring that area looking for homes, I think we may have sold a few of those homes in less than 12 months. But ideally, a 12-month hold where you've placed it in service, ready and available, hopefully it had a tenant in it. I don't care how much of a bombed-out hulk it was. Potentially, if it has a tenant in it, you're good to go on starting the depreciation clock. And then a lot of your repairs that might otherwise be capital in nature, all of them would be. If you don't have a property that's ready to be placed in service, everything you spend on that property is going to be capitalized. Whereas if it's ready and available and could be rented or is rented, better yet, then repair money, and when you think about repairs versus capital, consider an automobile. An oil change is a repair. A transmission overhaul or replacement is capital. So in the context of a rental property, repairing a broken window, painting certain types of flooring, like VCT vinyl tile, those are repairs. Replacing a air conditioning unit, HVAC, or replacing a roof, those tend to be, with a few exceptions, capital in nature. So again, different treatment is available for a property that's already been placed in service. So in any event, but back to the concept of flipping versus investing. If you're buying and selling 8 properties a year without putting tenants in them or without buying them with tenants in them, you're flipping. There's just no way around it. If you're reporting those transactions on Schedule D, you know, as a sale, and you're claiming capital gain treatment, if that were to be scrutinized by regulatory authorities, namely the IRS, you're going to lose on that argument. You can't argue, hey, I was buying all 8 of these properties as an investment, and lo and behold, I had 8 hot offers come in after a couple weeks, and you're just not going to be able to claim capital gain. It's going to be ordinary income, and it's the worst. It's the third level of income, or the third type of income, and it involves not only income tax. You're going to pay the normal income tax depending on your bracket. You might pay as much as 37%. Could be actually more if it threw you up over, I believe it's $250,000 for single folks, where you'd be subject to the Obamacare tax, the extra 3.8%, also referred to as the net investment income tax. and it's brutal. And then on top of that, you've got self-employment tax. And you're probably thinking, well, wait a minute, I didn't think self-employment tax applied to property. Well, it doesn't unless you're in the business of selling property. You've got a dealer status because you're selling, I don't know, I'm not going to say there's any hard-coded number in the Internal Revenue Code, but it's probably not one or two homes a year. It's probably not, or it probably is, you know, 8 to 10 or 15. Clearly, you've got a trade or business going on there, and it's the worst possible type of income. You're going to lose up to 41% or so of your gains will be lost to tax. It's just not an efficient way to operate that type of business. And, you know, again, the best way to avoid it is to reduce the number of properties that you're going to do. So, okay, so we're going to come back. We've kind of gotten through day one of the Self-Made Millionaire two-day workshop. Not that you'll hear much about flipping, but you'll hear about rental properties, trust me, because that's where the real financial freedom comes from. I would just not necessarily agree that it comes from being a single-family landlord. And we'll talk more about that when we come back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A, acquisition to E, exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were just talking about single family type investing. And touch briefly on those that are doing flips. And I guess, you know, the one reason you might do a flip, for those that are just getting started out, don't have the amount of capital that they need. You know, I've seen incredible amounts of money made flipping properties. If you've got some inside knowledge on an area and maybe the type of distress that might apply to a property. And remember, distress is not always obvious. You know, we focus on distressed properties, of course, but we would also focus on distressed situations. And I remember when we were buying and selling the properties we did in San Antonio, we had a relationship with a realtor that was a member of a church there on the east side, very old congregation. And as you might expect, there were a lot of old congregants that passed away. And we had the ability through the realtor, he was, you know, well-known, well-respected in both the church and the community, and he would make the heirs aware that, hey, I've got some folks that'll pay you, they'll close quickly, they'll pay cash in most situations, and that's where it's important for you, or it would translate to cash. You know, we had a line of credit lined up, so it's important for you to do everything you'll hear about in most seminars on buying single family real estate. You got to get your approvals lined up. You have, you know, an ability to finish the deal quickly, and your reputation and your ability to get the next referral from whoever the realtor is that's working with you will be directly related to how you processed prior referrals. Did you string it along? Did you give a reasonably quick yes or no, I'll do this deal, and did you follow through and go all the way to closing and do what you say you're going to do? I can't tell you how important that is to me, both as a buyer and a seller. You know, I've sold a number of properties over the years, and the first thing I'm looking at is what are the odds. The offer is almost irrelevant, although in some cases the offer itself is going to tell you you're dealing with somebody that's never been to the finish line, and depends on the terms they want, depends on a lot of things. I know, you know, I've got or had properties that were old properties, and little things like inspections. If you start an inspection on a 110-year-old building, you're never going to finish. And so you want to find a buyer that has purchased old properties, understands what they're dealing with. And I've just flat out told some people along the way that, hey, I don't want to be your first piece of old real estate. If you've never had an older property, and I'm talking, you know, 50, 60 years old, not just 100, 110 years old, I don't want to do business with you because I know what's going to happen. I'm going to go under contract with you. I'm going to take the property off the market. You're going to find what I would think of as normal issues with old properties, okay? And it's going to scare the uninitiated. They're not going to realize, they won't have been through it many times before, and they'll turn that, you know, little issue into just a huge issue that they can't get past to get to closing. And I'll tell you, in the 5, 6, 7 years that we were buying those old houses on the east side, we didn't do one inspection. We knew exactly what we were buying. We knew that every property had issues, and yet we were comfortable enough. We had business partners, we referred to our contractors as such, that we knew they would be able to handle whatever we threw at them. And so in any event, that's the scenario where you need to raise some money quickly, and you've got perhaps some good referrals where you can get in, get out of the flip. Know that you've got a tax bill coming. Be prepared for that. But anyway, so Let's go back to the two-day workshop that's happening this weekend in Houston. Again, the Be a Planner Show is recommending that you attend that workshop either this weekend or in the future. Tell them that the Be a Planner Show sent you. And if you go to that workshop, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a break on your fees if you decide you want to engage us to consult with you on the multifamily aspect of investing, which that's what you're going to hear about on day two. And throughout day one, you're going to hear some leaks, some well-placed leaks through the audience about, well, tomorrow, you know, we're going to be talking about the good stuff, you know, the multifamily. And man, is it expensive. It is so expensive to join that group, but the upside can be significant. And so those rumors will be swirling. And come day two, again, day two is worth the price of admission, which you will have already paid for. So it's, I'm not saying it's worth free. It's certainly not worth being free. It's worth more than that. And it will change your life much more than I would suggest single family does. Single family, I would suggest to you, if you get through multiple single family homes and you're still net positive on your cash flow, congratulations, because that doesn't happen a whole lot in spite of what you may be told. And the best case for single family is that you ride out ownership through a period of inflation where now you can turn around and sell a home. I know I've got the clients here in Houston that bought houses back in the 60s or 70s for $30,000 that are selling for over $500,000 now. Well, it's not them. It's not that they did anything special. They may have purchased in a decent neighborhood that regentrified or otherwise has been maintained. It's inflation. But hey, if you're the seller, you'll take it. Don't argue. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Take it. And hopefully you're going to turn around and buy somewhere where you can still get a reasonable value. But anyway, and part of the reason that multifamily is preferred is just the way a multifamily property is valued, which in turn translates to cash flow for the investor. And, you know, a multifamily property is based on an income stream. We refer to it as net operating income and a cap rate, which the cap rate just essentially is the rate that an investor might want to pay to buy your property. Okay, so I know I'm dumbing that down a bit, simplifying it, but suffice it to say that it differs dramatically from the way a single family property gets valued, where the single family property, you're going to cap out the top value that you can sell at is based on what one of your neighbors sold for 2 weeks ago or 2 months ago, as the case may be. It's a comp. And it doesn't matter how much better you operate that property, you're not selling it based on the income stream. You're selling it based on the neighborhood, which is, again, directly correlates to what one of your neighbors was able to sell for. And then on top of that, you've got the passive nature of multifamily, much more passive when you join as an investor and you've are putting money into the pot with the sponsor or syndicator or lead partner, whatever you want to call them. And they're going to find the property. They're going to do the due diligence on the property. You're going to review certain pro forma information that they put together where they're saying, hey, this is what we're buying. This is where it's at now in terms of rental rates, you know, deferred maintenance, et cetera. This is the business plan we have, the vision for making that property profitable. We're going to bring it up to market. We're going to add some amenities, maybe stainless appliances, maybe a BART park for the pets, maybe a media room. Try to make it more in line with what the top Class A developers are bringing to market. And, of course, the rental rates won't approach the top Class A type properties, but they should be able to be up to the market rate for, you know, in most cases, a 50 or 60 year old Class C minus apartment that once it's acquired can become a C plus, maybe a B minus. It's rare that you can go up a whole grade, but hey, it happens. And so, but again, the syndicator, the sponsor, the lead partner is the one that's doing the heavy lifting. They're, in addition to finding the property, doing the due diligence and raising capital and putting debt in place, that's on their back. That's not on the passive investor's back. You will not be guaranteeing a loan, either as a key principal or worse, as a joint and several guarantor, which you should avoid at all costs. If you're ever asked to sign a joint and several loan guarantee by syndicator, you need to get up and walk out of the room and go wait for another deal to come through. You don't want to sign any documents related to being responsible for any kind of default on the debt. And the key principal role is different than the joint and several loan guarantee. The joint and several loan guarantee puts your personal assets at risk for any reason that that debt is defaulted on, whereas the qualified non-recourse debt that a key principal agrees to guarantee, that's only in the case, and I don't want to say it's only, it is a serious obligation. It's in the case where maybe there's been some malfeasance, you know, your bookkeeper absconded with some rental funds and bought a fancy vacation or otherwise used the money. That's one example, maybe an extreme one, but it's happened. And though then the key principals will be required to cough up to cover the debt. And if your sponsor is not a key principal, you'd want to find out why. You know, we like to see sponsors that have skin in the game, or, you know, they've got a dog in the hunt, so to speak. But anyway, the multifamily options will be discussed on day two of the workshop. And for those of you that say, man, this sounds great, but I think I need somebody riding shotgun to help me understand what I'm signing up for, we've done it many, many times over the last 20 years. You'll go to our website, baplannershow.com, and fill out that first form on the forms page. Schedule a call, and we'll be happy to explain how we can sync up with your needs and objectives. Enjoyed the show today. We're coming to the end. We will be back on Sunday, 7 a.m., right here on KSEV.